You're tuned to 90.5 WICN, Jazz Plus for New England. You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Listen online at WICN.org. Good evening, I'm Al Voner, and this is this week's edition of The Public Eye. So nice to have you with us. Now, I know, and you know, that from time to time, many of us enjoy a good meal with a great glass of wine. I know I do that more often than most. No, I don't go overboard, but I am a wine lover, have been for many, many years, and I know that many of our listeners are. And one of my favorite wines, and I think one of the best produced wines in America, anyway, is Chapelet, a family-owned winery for over 50 years, which in and of itself is something that I think is amazing. Same family has owned it since the beginning. And they turn out some terrific wines. But beyond that, I wanted to share another side to the wine industry. You know, we can go out to liquor stores, we can go out to restaurants, we can go to wine tastings and, you know, taste a good wine and say, just I want to pick up a couple of bottles or I'll take a couple of bottles. But what about the people behind the scenes? This evening, I'm joined by Philip Titus, a winemaker extraordinaire. And a gentleman who's been making great wines in California for many, many years, has traveled the world, excels in winemaking, and has been an integral part of the Chapelet winemaking process. So for the next half hour, we'll be talking with Phil Titus about his experience, about the wine industry, and why this particular winery, the Chapelet family, has been able to sustain itself for so many years, putting out quality wines, some of the best wines actually in America. Philip, nice to have you with us.
Yeah, nice to be here.
You know, people think of, you know, some of the great areas, the Medoc, the Bordeaux areas of France. You go down into some of the great areas in Italy, the Chianti region. But, you know, I always say when I come home, and I spent some time in Italy this year and did taste some terrific wines, but I always look forward to coming home and tasting Cabernet, which is my favorite, especially California Cabernet up in the Napa Valley. And you guys, Chapelet in particular, is right on the top of my list. And I'm not just saying that. It's a wine that I have found consistently to be not only delicious tasting, pairs extremely well with food, but I find that it is always a go-to wine. But more importantly, let's go back to the beginning. You've had the experience of being in the wine business for many, many years. How extraordinary is it here in the year 2025 that a family-owned winery that's been around for over decades still in the hands of the family? Is that something that's very rare, especially among California wineries?
You know, it didn't used to be. You know, really, I got into the wine business, actually, it goes way back because my parents bought vineyards in St. Helena in the 60s when I was a little kid. And, you know, and so we were, you know, immediately immersed in the wine business. And it's coincidentally, the Chapelets bought their vineyard in 1967 and my parents bought the vineyard in 1968. But because we lived in a neighboring town, I knew about Chapelet because they were building their winery and it was very spectacular. It wasn't so big, but it was just that it was so unusual, the architecture, and that, you know, they were from Los Angeles, you know, they weren't locals, and they were building this avant-garde three-sided pyramid winery. And so it really caught my eye, even at 12 years old. I was very aware that something unusual was happening. And then my parents being in the business, not making wine, but just growing grapes and selling the grapes. Then that was pre, the influx of corporations and venture capitalists and things like that. And basically, it was even before Hugh Blind bought Inglenook and Beaulieu Vineyards, BV. So really everything was family owned. There wasn't anything, you couldn't find anything that wasn't, you know, there may be just some partnerships and things like that, but otherwise it was all family owned and it was pretty small. And I believe there were only 32 wineries in Napa Valley at the time. I think Chapelet was either number 32 or 3. So really everything was family owned. And then it changed pretty rapidly after that. And it was kind of, you know, for me, a little like disturbing to see, because you know, I realized over time that I don't really like to see things like that change, but it really has. And now there's fewer and fewer family-owned wineries. And really you have to, you know, sit around with somebody and go like, oh, and that one's family-owned, like Schramsberg. And you go like, yeah, that's family-owned. And then, you know, you kind of have to think real hard about who is still family owned, and it's not that many.
Well, you know, Philip, what's interesting and why maybe it resonates with me so much is that, you know, I grew up in a time here up here in New England, in central Massachusetts, where almost anything that a consumer would want was bought through a local small business where family were running. My own family was in the men's retail clothing business for close to 50 years. So I had an appreciation for that. And it carries over to the wine industry. And as you said, decades ago, it was not unusual to find a husband and wife or somebody, you know, an owner on premise, sometimes both the owner and the winemaker combined, doing both functions. But as you said, Chapelet, and I just want to give a little bit of quick background that Don Chapelet was not weaned on wine. He was a businessman who sold his business because he had a love for wine and thought, you know, before it gets too late, I want to move on and fulfill my passions. Which is also kind of unique and somewhat extraordinary, because a lot of people say, oh, geez, you know, all those years, I mean, he did well in business. Why not just sit back, relax, and then drink somebody else's wine. But he chose to pursue a whole new career along with his wife. That says something about, you know, his love of wines. But more importantly, you come into play. You get someone that may not be, noted as well, not trained in wine making. So how did this collaboration between Philip Titus and the Chapelets begin? And did they reach out to you directly, or how did that work?
Well, I was, so the original winemaker at Chapelet was Philip Tanyi. And he was, you know, still around on Spring Mountain. He has a vineyard and a winery there. And I don't think I would be getting myself in trouble by saying he's fairly imposing guy. You know, he had a big reputation and a big personality, and he was fairly stern, and he was actually a friend of my father's. And he would be at our house at times, and I would always like say hi and then leave, you know, because he just commanded the whole room. So he was a big, you know, he was a big character, big personality. And then when he left, his assistant, Joe Cafaro, became the winemaker, and Joe is still around. I see him from time to time. He didn't stay long, only 2 years as winemaker. And then he left there was other opportunities kind of coming up. There were new wineries. And so, I think it was easy to move on at that day. There was lots of opportunity. Tony Soder was his assistant, and he was a philosophy major at Pomona College, and was just really getting his feet under him as a winemaker. He stayed 4 years, and then and that's when I came in, just getting out of UC Davis at 22 years old. And Kathy Corson, who's definitely still around and making great wine in St. Helena, she became the winemaker, and I was her assistant. And so I didn't, you know, the collaboration started by meeting Don Chapelet, walking through the front door. Don was at his desk, and I came in with my resume applying for a harvest position. And Don was just so great to me. You know, we talked, and I thought, oh, well, I should, you know, leave him alone, let him do his work. And he was like, oh, well, you know, what are you interested in? And I told him my story, and I was really so impressed with the place. I just fell in love with it. I mean, you cannot not fall in love with Chapelet when you walk through that front door, because you see this very soaring, the wood beams and the high ceilings, and it's, it was dubbed as the Cathedral of Wine. And still today you walk in and it takes your breath away. Even, you know, 56 years later, it still just feels amazing. So I really fell in love with the place, and I was just washing barrels and, doing the, the harvest, pumping over the tanks and jumping in the tanks and shoveling them out and, doing anything that any other, base level cellar worker would do. And that's how you learn. You learn by doing. And I had lots of questions, even though I'd been to UC Davis and I understood agriculture and winemaking to a degree. Winemaking is something you learn as you do it. It takes time. You're not immediately a winemaker when you get a degree. You have to kind of get a sense of the rhythm of the whole process. It's a very long process and a meticulous process between growing the grapes that takes a year, and then, making the wine during harvest, but then aging it for 2 years and, all the various things that happen during that 2 years, you really have to pay attention for a long, long time, not to mention sometimes a year of aging before you release it in the bottle. So I was always around Don. He and I got along very well. For some reason, Don was a man of few words, but when he wanted to talk, he wanted to talk, and I was always ready to talk to him. And so it was a great relationship. I left for, I was impatient. I left, I took another job, as a winemaker at a, very starting level winemaker, but always stayed in contact with Don and Kathy. So really I had a very, even though I was gone, it was like I was still there because I would still come back. I would still see them. I would still taste the wines each year. I would see Don down at Keller's Market when he'd be shopping and I'd be buying something for lunch and we'd talk, of course. And so when Kathy Corison struck out on her own to start her own brand, Don called me and I wasn't at my desk. I came back and there was a post-it note that said, call Don Chapelet. And this was 1989. I'd been gone for 5 years. And I thought, oh, well, I'm going back to Chapelet. All I needed to see was the post-it note. And sure enough, I called Don and he told me Kathy was leaving and to come on up and let's talk. And we did. And we talked, I think we must have talked 3 or 4 or 5 hours because I remember I got there and it was in March and it was like 2 o'clock in the afternoon. Though when I left, it was dark. And I was driving down the hill in the dark. And I thought, wow, this has been my dream. I'm going back to work for Chapelet.
Well, it says something about Don's recognizing or seeing something in you long ago and thought, I was impressed with Philip Titus back then. I've got this opening now. I'm gonna reach out to him and see if this if we can develop this relationship. And obviously, you did. And as they say, the rest is history. And you've become a noted globally. Most people recognize your work. And you've branched out in so many directions and giving advice and explaining things. I do want to go back to one thing that you mentioned because I think it's very important. Here in the United States, UC, University of California in Davis, is noted. They have a whole winemaking program. So many winemakers-to-be take courses, but as Philip has explained, it's all about hands-on. And that's true with just Philip, I just want to get your sense on that. That's basically true with anything, but you can get you can get a degree from UC Davis and graduate summa cum laude. But until you're in the vineyard, until you're actually producing that first bottle, that's where the highway meets the road, right?
Yeah, it's really true. And luckily, I always think back during that time. The stakes weren't so high. Wine quality had not achieved the level that it has, say, in the last even 20 or 30 years, that young winemakers could still learn on the job. There were really, to my knowledge, only a few people that even called themselves consultants I can only think of maybe like Andre Chelischev was a consultant and some people did hire him at that time. He had left BV, but that was somebody that was really kind of stepping out of tradition to hire a consultant to help them make better wine. So you kind of just learned it. You had to learn it and you had to pay attention to what was going on. but it took a few years, and you were allowed to make some mistakes back then. Not everything turned out perfectly, because the whole level of knowledge was not so high that there were still a few bad wines back then. You know, there was Brettanomyces, there was a yeast that, you know, gives the wine what at the time is debatable whether it was an off character, because a lot of wines around the world had Brettanomyces. So if there was Brettanomyces, some people considered it normal. It was becoming undesirable and considered a spoilage organism. So there was Brettanomyces, there was volatile acidity. There were like certain bacteria and things like that that today you never see anymore, but because sanitation wasn't that good back then, you did see some of these things. So I always, when I look back, you know, I kind of go like, wow, you know, you could not make these rookie mistakes these days at a place like Chapelet or the high-end producers in Napa Valley or Bordeaux. There's no room for these kind of basic mistakes, or even having a wine out of balance. It was very common to see wines that were like brutally tannic or, you know, very low in acid, and just people didn't have a sense of, it was more like, well, this is what the vineyard gave me, and so I'm going to put it in the bottle. Winemakers didn't intervene in the vineyards that much. You know, there was a vineyard manager and a winemaker, and they would talk to each other, but not much beyond that. Now a winemaker is in the vineyard all the time,
yeah,
and helping to shape the next vintage by being in the vineyard and seeing how the grapes were grown, having input into the, you know, the pruning, the thinning of the grapes, the canopy manipulations that allow more or less sunlight into the canopy. Winemakers know that kind of thing now. So it does take time, and you don't learn it at Davis. They just don't have time to teach you, you know, at the,
right,
the 4-year degree. And most of it, you know, is in your senior year. You know, the way college works is you're studying all your underclass,
courses,
you know,
yeah,
chemistry and things like that. And then it's kind of like in your senior year, you focus on wine.
Wow.
So there's no way to learn how to really make wine. I made wine in a 5-gallon bucket.
Yeah, I've heard of those stories a few times. I just want to step in and just take a quick pause to remind our listeners that you're tuned to 90.5 WICN, Jazz Plus for New England. You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Listen online at WICN.org. This is The Public Eye. I'm Alvone, your host. My guest this week is winemaker extraordinaire Philip Titus. Now working to produce terrific wines at the Chapelet, which is a family-owned winery, still family-owned winery in Napa, California for over 50 years. Phil, you talked upon some of the things you were talking about. I'm thinking, you know, that applies. There's no room for error, and you're right, because the marketplace has become saturated, as you know, with millions of labels out there. And, you know, if you want to stand out, you better have an extraordinary product. And you recognize that right off the bat. But let me ask you, with that said, was Don Chapelet, was he particular about the quality, or did he just say, look, Philip, I'm going to leave it up to you? Did he often sit down and say, hey, before we put this vintage out, I want to taste that wine to make sure that it's quality enough because my name is on the bottle? Was he that kind of an owner?
No, he was more of a delegator. You know, he didn't hire me to tell me how to do, you know, how to make the wine. And I tried to involve him more in the process. And he was very patient with me, and he would, you know, come and taste the wine with me. And, you know, there's a lot of tasting that goes on in winemaking, a lot of trials, blending trials, you know, tasting the new wine, seeing what it needs, all the adjustments you make throughout that 2-year period. And it's fairly tedious, and it's usually you taste in the morning. We are fresher, our palates are fresher in the morning. We're more alert in the morning. You know, you have coffee or tea, and then you know, sit down and taste. And he was finally told me, he goes, you know what? You don't need to include me in all this. I trust you. and I've seen that over the years. One of his sons tasted with us for a while. And as the winery grew and we made more wines, it just means more and more repetition and blending and all these different things we do and traveling to, you know, vineyards where we bought grapes like Chardonnay, and things like that. And I've just seen people tap out over the years and they think, oh, this is going to be great. And they do it a few times and then they stop showing up. Wow. And then you realize that that winemakers have a passion for it. It doesn't mean that everybody does. They love the wine. They love the process. They love watching us. You know, they'll come in my office in the lab and see us tasting and they'll like smile and leap. but it's as much fun as it looks like. After you do it for a while, people go like, you know, it's actually kind of a lot of work and it's kind of hard on your body.
Oh yeah.
The whole wine tasting process, yep. Repetition, and the hour, you know, we usually start at 10 and finish, you know, around 11:30. And then sometimes go back and taste in the afternoon when we're, you know, on a deadline for something like that.
Yeah.
Turns out most people just don't want to do that as much as they might think that it looks like fun once they do it. So Don just kind of said, you know, really, you don't need, you know, he was very gracious in saying like, you know, you go ahead and take care of this. You got this.
And that's a good thing because it meant that you didn't feel like someone was over your shoulder. And I think that's so important when you have that creativeness. And obviously winemaking is indeed a very creative endeavor. We're running out of time. We've only got a few moments left. I just want to ask, obviously winemaking, people travel all over the world. I get friends that just to do that, just to go to Europe or out to California. In fact, I've got some friends leaving in a few weeks, going out west and may end up, you know, tasting wines at Chapelet. But if people want to reach out to you directly, get more information about you and the work that you do at Chapelet, how might they do that, Phil?
Well, email is still the best for me because, you know, it's always open and I pride myself in returning everybody's emails. So Philip with two L's, at chapelet.com. And I'm always there.
Yeah, no, and
I'm tasting between 10 and 11:30. So that's maybe when I'm not watching my email.
I hear you. But you know what? The proof is, as they say, and I'll wrap it up with that. The proof is in the pudding. The Chapelet wines have for decades been extraordinary, more so today than ever before. And obviously, Philip Titus has had a major role in that. They are wines that are widely available. No, I do not work for the Chapelet family or the winery. I just know that over 30, 40 years of drinking wine and writing about wines, this is a standout winery, still family owned, still producing magnificent wines. So the next time you're looking for a Cabernet, a Merlot, a Chenin Blanc, Cabernet Franc, this is a winery and a wine to look for. If you have any questions about the broadcast, you can certainly give us a call here at the studios to WICN. Our number is 508-752-0700. You can reach me directly by email as well. That's Al Vona, V-U-O-N-A, at WICN.org. Again, I want to thank my friend, my winemaking friend, Philip Titus, for joining us for this half hour and talking about the wonderful world of wine. For the public eye, this is Al Vona. Thank you.